Anybody ever tell you you have the heart of a python?
You have a commentary? Call CNN.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This episode of Melrose Place coming at you soon. It is season 4, episode 14, Two Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Yes, yes, yes. Oh. And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Good save, Cole.
Yep.
Yeah.
Name, rank, and serial number. They haven't got a thing on you. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Again With This. We want to tell you what's coming up this week on the Patreon. Episode 66 of Again With This is dropping October 1st. Let's watch Ian Ziering in Flower Babies. What? Mm. Well, Flower Babies was a 1990 CBS school break special, aired in January of that year, so just mere months ahead of his time as Steve on 90210. Linda Lavin directed this thing, you guys. It's going to be a trip. It's on YouTube. We'll link it in the show notes here so that you can watch it if you wish. And if you want to join us for that discussion, patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you those weekly, more or less, bonus episodes for a month. All right, let us get into Two Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I just scroll up there.
I see.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Quite. Yes. Verily.
Starting with our D plot for Dick. Thanks to Shelley, Jake is broke and desperate. Joe sits down at the bar at Shooters and openly eavesdrops on Amanda telling Jake he has bounced his second rent check on her. He vaguely blames problems with the books, I guess, to save face about having hired an embezzler. But, like, Amanda used to fuck you, dude. I think if you tell the truth, she's not going to be shitty about it. Probably.
Yeah, she doesn't seem to be in shitty Amanda mode lately.
No. Not about him. Not when Brooke is up in her business all the time. She's got bigger problems. Anyway, Jake claims he'll have everything sorted out in a few days, and she accepts that. Joe does not look so sure, and once Amanda has left, she goes over to ask him, gently, what is going on. Clip 2.
No dance night, no waitresses, no Shelley.
Well, she's gone to visit her folks. The dance night guys, they flaked on me, so I fired them, and some of the waitresses called in sick.
It's me, Jake.
What do I have to do? Offer you a beer on the house for you to believe that I'm solvent?
I know you, Jake.
No, you don't. That's the way I want it.
Lone Wolf Hansen. He don't need anyone.
Redirect?
Yep.
The dance night guys?
Yeah.
What? You had to outsource dance night to guys? Plural.
DJs, I assume? I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of.
I'm just imagining these two guys who are like, you know, we're the dance night guys.
Yeah, it's Daft Punk, Sarah. Come on. Later, Jake has to tell a couple of patrons from the A-plot, we will get to them, that he's closing Shooters at 8. So things are going great. And when we last see Jake in this plot line, we are in a pool hall where only the very worst people in the Starverse go to live out their most lurid of lives, whether it's to score heroin, find a discount hitman, etc.
They got some good hates. That guy's rattling around that joint, though.
They do. John Grease.
Yep. This one is Danny Darst, who you may remember as the ill-starred Sergeant Tate from Silence of the Lambs. Yeah,
tough times.
They got his face back for him, and now he hangs out at the pool hall. Spoiler? Just kidding.
Here he is a guy named Monty who knows Jake, presumably from other times before he knew Jake, when he got up to no good at this place, since that's what this place is for. Monty is a loan shark because it's come to this, and that's where we leave him. At least, I trust that Jake will know better how to deal with a loan shark than David did. Not try to pass a bad check to him, for example. But anyway.
Oh, God, like it's Bloomingdale's. What a douche.
Let's leave this behind. Move on to our C plot. Matt meets an actor. Michael and Matt are treating some dude when they, because remember, Matt is a medical student now, when they hear a fight from the other side of the curtain. Apparently an actor, whose name we will learn is Alan Ross, has broken his wrist playing roller hockey, because it's 1996, and is getting in heck from his agent about it, because Alan's probably going to lose a job he just booked. And Matt goes over to deal with it just before the agent stalks out. And we know you're mad at your barber about that ponytail, dude, but don't take it out on your client. See this ponytail in the visual aids. Then shit rolls downhill from Alan to Matt, since Matt interrupted what Alan characterizes as a negotiation. And once Alan finds out Matt is a medical student, he snaps at Matt to find another guinea pig and leave him alone. And Matt is like, clip three.
Fine, I'll leave you alone. You show some courtesy to the people around you. This is a hospital. People are dying.
Yeah, so is my career.
So it is true what they say about actors. You really do think you're the center of the universe.
I see what you did there, show. Cute.
Yeah. And then he ran so far away because his hair is bonkaloo.
Yep.
Even more bonkaloo. This is a good looking man. Please figure it out. Someone quickly. It's making me sad. Also, do you feel like the actor playing Alan looks a little too much like the actor who was playing Vic?
The hair, maybe? I didn't
particularly
think they didn't remind me of each other. But now that you say it, I can see it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's all I had.
So elsewhere, later on, Matt returns to see Alan, who wanted to apologize for being an ass. This part was his big break, and he lost it with his carelessness. LOL at the idea that they've kept this guy in a hospital bed for multiple days for a concussion. I guess that SAG insurance is real good.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever, he can probably get out in a couple more days. No.
What is it, like, my God, it just reminded me of, like, The Natural, when he has to be on the maternity ward for, like, 10 days.
Yeah.
And it's all the same, but, like, everyone's in there for 2 weeks, like, for a hangnail?
Yeah.
Okay, 30s.
Seriously. Like, when you have a cesarean, they're like, it's been 10 hours, could you just, but this guy's just malingering.
Here's an ace bandage, figure it out. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Anyway, Matt nicely adds that if Alan got one part, he'll get another, because, sure, that's how an acting career works. But this one was perfect. Was a man whose overbearing father pushed him to be a tennis pro, which Alan knew he could do since he also has a tough time with his dad.
Is this the Roger Azarian story? Finally out of development hell?
They made his movie.
They did. I'm so glad. Well done.
Good for Roger. Matt says his own dad died recently, but that they had set things right first. And then he goes to rounds, Alan thanking him on his way for being understanding. And in the hall, Matt makes a face like, were we vibing just then? Which is very cute. And you can see that.
It was cute.
And then at the hospital the next day, Matt enters just as Alan is signing out, dressed somehow like all the male friends from Friends. You can see this in the visual aids. He's in like this vest. It's so ugly from the front. He's like a discount magician. And then when he turns around, you can see it's like leather on the back, or it's leather.
Oh, God.
It's just, it's something no one should wear. Like, this is why you're losing parts if you're wearing this to auditions, my dude.
Awful. Absolutely awful.
Yeah. So Matt wishes Alan luck and moves on, but Alan stops to apologize again. His agent isn't dropping him, but he's still not sure about the part. Matt is encouraging it and then asks him out for drinks. Matt, look at you.
Mm.
I'm sure he's got problems because all his boyfriends do, but for now, good for Matt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On to the B plot. Allison is a not-so-merry widow. Well, time for our second funeral in 3 episodes. This one is for Haley. It is
sparsely attended, does not begin.
Precisely that phrase in my notes as well. But Allison's on one side of the coffin. A note about her wardrobe, Sarah?
Look, I know it's your husband and you might feel like certain mores don't apply to you, but you absolutely must wear stockings with the mini skirt suit that you're wearing graveside. Come on. Come on.
Sorry, these are in fact the rules.
Yeah, they are.
Anyway, she's on one side of the coffin. Billy and Brooke are on the other with some old dude that we haven't seen before. And Allison lays a rose on the casket, says a few unmemorable words, and wanders off. And Billy watches her, but Brooke pouts that Allison obviously wants to be alone. And as Brooke and Billy are leaving with the old guy, the cops approach. We learn this old guy is Norman, Haley's attorney. He thanks the cops for waiting until after the funeral to seize all of Haley's assets, including the limousine that they were about to leave in.
Hilarious.
His death is not going to be the end of the SEC investigation, apparently, because why would it? He is not the company. This is the first Brooke is hearing about any of this, and she is horrified while Billy just blandly smiles next to her, as you can see in the visual aids. Because, as we've been saying, he does not know what to do with his face.
No, first face he grabbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, aghast to learn that Haley is broke, Brooke stalks over to Allison. Clip 4.
What the hell did you do to my father? Everything was fine before he met you.
I've only been with him a month. If you're looking for culpability, look in a mirror.
Daddy never would have killed himself. You did it, didn't you? That's why you wanted him buried so fast, isn't it?
That's enough.
Isn't it?
Mrs. Armstrong?
Yes.
Come with us, please. We'd like to ask you some questions regarding your husband's death.
I don't understand.
Well, it seems there's been some questions raised, and since the incident took place on international waters, we need some answers.
You did this.
My God, you called the police.
I had to, in the name of justice.
My God, you called the police. I don't hate that line reading. It's just like, my God, you married this person you despise. Like, why don't you just leave?
Yeah.
Like, just hop in the trunk of the cop car, which should be the FBI because international waters.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. All of this is like, and here again, Allison has just said the unmemorable, but like also totally overwrought teenage like protestation of eternal love. And then she's like, I knew the guy a month. The fuck? I don't know.
Yeah.
Which is it, writers? Mm-hmm. Within the same scene, you need to pick an emotion or like a relationship for this person to act and let her act it.
Yep.
No, not happening.
By the way, this is our first time seeing Robert Gossett as Detective Smith on Melrose, but he previously played Detective Woods during Kelly's drive-by and subsequent amnesia arc on 90210.
Oh, yeah.
That guy. Over the credits, there is some very bad sub music that it is important for you to hear. Clip 5.
Everybody's unified. So let's do it one more time. Hey, bartender. I said, hey, bartender. Hey, bartender, won't you wanna just one more beer? Slide it over here.
I mean, first of all, the last scene we saw was In the Name of Justice that we just heard, that clip. Mm-hmm. The next one is Allison being interrogated at the cop shop.
Yeah.
Allison, who is in recovery.
Yeah.
It doesn't go tonally. It's inappropriate to the character. And it's a ripoff of an already terrible song called Jim Dandy, which you may have heard in films such as Overboard. Why? Why is this? It's only season 4. You can't be giving up this much.
Well, I assume already. It was not that song originally, but yeah, it's... I don't think
it was much better.
Perhaps. I'll look it up in the next clip what that song actually was. After that, we rejoin Allison and Detective Smith, as Sarah said, in an interrogation room. Apparently, hours have passed during which she has not asked for a lawyer, stupidly. Mm-hmm. But after saying that booze gave Haley insomnia, it's a depressant. I don't know how that works, but okay, I guess.
I mean, it can. You sometimes wake up.
All right. Fair.
In the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep.
Okay, fair. And that she doesn't drink herself. She finally gets around to asking for a lawyer, but Smith says she can go anyway. And then it's time for the reading of the LOL will, except clip six.
To my daughter, Brooke Armstrong Campbell, the executor of this will, I leave a trust of $1 million for her unborn child.
$1 million?
For the child, Brooke.
I thought all of her father's assets were frozen.
The trust is a separate entity from the estate holdings. It's untouchable. As well as the whole of my estate and all of my worldly possessions.
He left nothing to his wife?
He wasn't married. He divorced Allison last week. I have the papers you signed.
Oh my God. You told me these were some kind of real estate documents.
I wish I knew why he did it, but I don't.
Well, well. I told you nothing good would come of you marrying Daddy. Now, by divorcing you, he's deprived you of your claim to the throne.
You're unbelievable. Thought you weren't gonna do this.
No. No. You're right. Absolutely. Why didn't I think of it?
Allison.
Haley never loved me. Maybe the two of you were in this together. How else could he have done all this behind my back?
Very easily, Allison. You aren't exactly one of the brightest kids in the class.
Shut up.
Since you aren't married anymore, I'll take your wedding ring. It's mine now.
Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
I mean, he said it was a quit claim. It was, I guess.
I mean, I assume he was trying to protect her from, or like plausible deniability.
Yeah.
Legal. Who knows? Doesn't matter, yes. Honestly.
Yeah. And I have to say, as implausible as I thought this was, it also just happened on the L Word Generation Q, which is a current day show with a dad who was in trouble with the SEC and got his daughter to sign some papers, making her think that it was just like estate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then after he got arrested, it turned out he had named her like CEO pro tem or whatever. So I guess this is a thing people do. And also an update
on
the song.
Anyway.
Right. Update on the song. Two different sources both say they don't have any record of any songs in this episode. So that was actually what was really in it. It wasn't sub music. It was just shitty music. So I apologize.
Yeah. Good job, guys.
Yeah. Way to get that check, George Thoroughbad. When we see Brooke next, she's at the office resigning to an unimpressed Amanda. Brooke claims she's having a hard time juggling marriage, LOL, and a career and impending motherhood and moving and being the executor of Haley's will. Amanda knows that Brooke has enough money not to have to work, but she thought the inheritance was for Brooke's unborn child. And Brooke says it is, but that she's overseeing it, which like, oh, you're going to be plundering it. Got it. And Amanda literally shrugs her acceptance of Brooke's resignation. But there's one other thing, Brooke says. Clip seven.
There generally is.
I know I gave you 2 weeks' notice, but I was hoping you wouldn't mind if I took a couple of days off.
Starting today, no doubt.
Yes. I've suffered a tremendous loss, and I need time to grieve. Daddy was all I've ever had, and I just don't know if I can ever get over it.
Excuse me. Your manicurist called to confirm your appointment, and I have the swimwear layout.
I'll see you in a couple days. You have my deepest condolences.
Thank you.
I don't know how you put up with that woman. Next to Brooke, Allison is Mother Teresa.
I mean, thank you for at least giving some character a line that's like, dude, what are you doing? Since
yes.
He obviously heard what she was saying and came in the office to sandbag her.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Divorce.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the sainted mother, Allison is out in the bullpen when Detective Smith shows up to say that Haley's death has been ruled accidental. He had cashed out an insurance policy a few weeks earlier, so... Allison asks if they think it's suicide, but Smith says that since Haley had not seemed distraught beforehand, they don't think so. I mean, yeah. Unless Allison wants to push it, the investigation is closed. Thank you for not lingering on this, because who cares, really?
yeah.
That night, Billy finds Allison in the office. late boxing up files from Haley's account. Billy tells her she doesn't have to do it right then, but she wants the distraction after what happened in the lawyer's office and doesn't feel like talking to friends. And he suggests that Haley divorced Allison to protect her, and she snaps at him. Clip 8.
You only knew Haley as the interfering father-in-law, the father who spoiled his daughter. Maybe now you only think of him as a corrupt businessman.
Give me a little credit. The guy was a force of nature. How could I blame him for wanting the best for his daughter?
Billy, Haley was my family. Nobody understands that. Least of all, someone who married a woman hell-bent on destroying me.
She doesn't have to destroy you.
Well, you're fooling yourself. But you made your choice, so you live your life and I'll live mine.
Fine. Have it your way.
I don't really get why this is Allison's attitude to Billy. Like, it would be one thing, and he would not be unjustified if his tack were, even in a nice way, to be like, you know, maybe you're better off in some ways not to still be legally entangled with all this shit right. that's going
on. Yeah.
But it's not. He's just like, you know, trying to be nice and tell her to, like, look after herself. And she's just snapping at him.
Well, and also, where is literally everyone else in the complex?
Yeah.
No one heard about this?
Right. Like, they've been trying so hard this season, especially, to make it seem like Allison and Jane are, like, co-conspirators in their various schemes.
Yeah.
Where like, is
Jane? Amanda would have gone to that funeral. She would have bitched about it, but she would have gone.
Yeah, I thought that, too. I forgot to say that when we were in that scene. You're totally right. She would have gone.
Like,
she
these are
Haley.
All her colleagues. There's no way that she's like, well, somebody's got to hold down the meeting. Like, maybe, right. But they didn't even give her a line about that, so.
Well, weird. They're all her colleagues, plus Haley was her client,
yeah.
too. Anyway.
Yeah.
The next day, Allison tells Amanda she's taking her off one of her accounts. Allison flaked on work for that surprise yacht trip. Now with grief on top of everything else, Amanda doesn't want Allison representing the agency at a conference that's coming up. Allison insists she can handle it and basically begs not to be punished for all the shit that she's been through, and Amanda relents. And when we see Allison next, she's just finished nailing a business dinner with Colfax, her client, when she sees the back of a guy's head that looks exactly like Haley's. But when she approaches, it's not him, of course, and she gets embarrassed. And since she has ended up at the bar, she goes ahead and orders a vodka rocks. Cue the downward curlicue. Billy is standing at reception when the woman on the desk takes a call for Allison. Off his nosy question about it, the receptionist says it was a secretary from Colfax saying that Allison didn't show up for her morning meeting. Oh, Allison.
Oh, Eeyore.
Billy offers to pass the message on to Amanda, but actually crumples it and calls Allison's hotel room in Santa Barbara. And she doesn't pick up, so he grabs his shit and takes off. And when we see him next, he's asking a housekeeper with this dumb little cap on, you can see in the visual aids, to let him into his room. Nice security, Santa Barbara Regency Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
It looks very motel-y, by the way, for something mm-hmm. called Regency. But anyway, he finds music playing loudly in her room and Allison on the balcony with an empty vodka bottle in hand, wasted as hell in a hotel robe. She is aggressive because she is drunk and Billy is pissy, even though no one asked him to do any of this. Clip 9.
What are you doing?
Came here to save your job. By the looks of things, maybe your life.
Are you kidding? You're the one who ruined it.
What the hell happened to you, all right? Amanda thought you could pull this thing off and you're just determined to screw
Please.
It up.
Please, stop pretending you care and go back to the hypocrisy you came from.
Give me that.
If two like to be in my corner! Oh, God, Billy, why is he divorcing me? I love him so much, Billy. I thought he loved me too. I'm gonna do that.
It's okay. Shh. It's okay.
Yikes.
I mean, I guess she loved him because she married him. But as we keep saying, like, they barely knew each other. And yeah, this was clearly a divorce on paper only. Like, it's mm-hmm. clear to everyone else. I don't know why it isn't clear to Allison, like, even in the midst of all her trauma.
Yeah.
Use your head.
Yeah. Like, he kidnapped you to take you with him on his new life. So clearly this was like a sort of safety net in case.
Yeah.
The authorities looked into it and were like, oh, well, she'll know where the money is. Like, well.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, drunk Allison, always a favorite.
It's very true.
It's nice that Courtney Thorne Smith gets this to do. She was good in that scene.
Finally, we have our A plot. Kimberly gets yet another improbable job while Bobby tries to deploy Peter for his own nefarious purposes. At the hospital, Kimberly plots is about getting back on staff there, which, what? Like, seriously? What? As we keep saying, she still has charges pending!
Yeah, I guess maybe the sort of assumption is, like, if we believed that this is an institution where Michael could blackmail his way into being chief resident, despite thinking himself that he had killed Kimberly.
Yeah.
That it's like, you know, healthcare, 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 healthcare.
Yeah, anything goes.
Makes no sense.
Right.
Yeah. They're just going to try every possible way, like every possible thing they can give Marcia Cross to do. And it's just like, nope, nope, nope. It's like Cher's closet and Clueless. I don't know when it stops, but here we are.
Yeah. Speaking of people who should not work there, Peter is there to accept her thanks for helping her with the bureaucracy. Shame all those conversations happened off screen because, again, what? But just then, Michael, the only one to object to this, apparently walks in with security guard. He orders to remove Kimberly. Peter calls Michael a thorn in the butt of medical progress, but Michael has standing, it seems. He checked, and Kimberly's medical license has not been reinstated. And honestly, why would it be?
No, why would it be?
But Peter says she's a psych intern starting today. He, like, hands him a piece of paper that looks like a certificate of, like, authenticity that came with your watch. Like, there's just, like, what is this? It's not a diploma. I don't know what
this
paper
is. It's like when you buy someone a star and get to name it. Like, that's, yeah. No, I don't think that's how it works.
It seems to convince Michael enough, however, to change tack. He's going to organize a boycott of all the other doctors against Kimberly. And when he leaves, she calls him a sociopath. Peter thinks it's just standard narcissism. Psychologists in our audience, please sound off in the comments. Tell us, first of all, how offended you are by all of this. And second, what is Michael's actual diagnosis, in your opinion? I would like to know.
Because there's a hat trick of them. And I, a civilian, think any one of them could maybe apply.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Amanda's working when Bobby enters to invite her for lunch. She thought she was clear. She didn't want to see him again after their drinks the other night. So Bobby says he's mostly there to withdraw the Parisi's cable account. Personally, she's delighted. Professionally, she wants to know why. There's sketchy business in the company, a word, and he doesn't want her implicated before he sorts it out. And he also doesn't want her to be reminded of Jack whenever she has to work on it. Then there are a lot of cliches in succession. Clip 10.
Mm-hmm. Step one in getting my trust back.
No, step one in righting family wrongs. Getting your trust back would be an extra perk.
Well, I appreciate the gesture, but like you said, your family casts a long shadow. You and your shadow go hand in hand.
There's perception and there's reality. Reality is I'm not my family. We've separated for years. People believe that eventually.
You and your shadow go hand in hand is such first draft writing. Like, no,
oh
no.
God.
Go back and
also,
that.
Could you just like put a black screen with a chyron that's like, see any speech of Michael Corleone? Like, come on.
Yeah.
The Borleone is trying to like launder their way into Nevada politics.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this.
Bobby then gives Amanda the address of the house he rented, ostensibly so she can send the paperwork there, mm-hmm. but, you know.
The paperwork.
Then we're in a dream sequence. Jane and Richard are naked and making out in the pool at the complex, but in reality, he's in bed next to Joe and wakes up all sheepish. And when she asks what he was dreaming about, he lies, her. She thinks their relationship will be perfect as soon as he dissolves the partnership with Jane. He claims the contracts are with the lawyers. She thinks it's wild how Jane can have so many partners, none of whom has worked out. Chris, not mentioned by name, but never forget.
Never forget. I mean, at least she hasn't killed anyone.
Right.
Very yet. True. Mm-hmm. As far as she knows, we'll get to it.
Yeah. Joe seems a little worried that Jane is going to get fucked over again, which, like, she fucked herself by having terrible instincts and doing no due diligence, frankly. But,
and being a bad designer. And also, if you're in someone's wet dream, don't have a wig on. But, okay, circumstances.
Oh, I just assumed they shot them, like, out of order. Because it didn't look wiggy to me. But the lighting was very harsh, so it was hard to tell.
Yes, it was not great.
Anyway, Richard promises he's more ethical than Jane's previous partners and that Jane will land on her feet. And then Sydney, in yet another dumb hair bow, come to see Kimberly with papers from Peter to Kimberly's office, which she has as an intern. Also, Peter also works at the hospital. He could bring them himself.
Mm-hmm.
Kimberly comments that it seems like something is bothering Sydney, to which Sydney is like, duh. And Kimberly puts on her gentlest voice to invite Sydney to sit. She seems like she needs someone to talk to. And Sydney says this, Club 11.
What do you mean, you?
Well, I don't bite. In fact,
don't you?
Before I got help, we were a lot alike. Always in Jane's shadow. Misunderstood. Disrespected. Dismissed. Taken advantage of. No one ever believed in me.
Yeah. Well, I'll think about it.
I gotta go. Get back to the office. Sydney. I'm here.
I almost buy this because Sydney is desperate to have anyone to talk to about her situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, who better than someone who has also been driven to and well beyond the brink of sanity?
Yeah.
By Michael. I mean, the last time these two teamed up, which I will bet you money, whoever wrote this scene did not remember.
Uh-huh.
That. Last time they teamed up didn't go so great, but I think it's overdue for them to give it another try.
I agree. Yeah, Redhead Squad, assemble.
Yeah.
At the studio, Jane, as we alluded before, has a new pixie cut, which her hair before was so pretty.
It was.
This is better than her short haircut from season one, certainly. It's not the mushroom situation.
Yes. It's the Mia Farrow situation. It's very cute. She can pull it off, and I sort of feel like if you can have short hair, you should.
Yeah.
Life's too short to be with a blow dryer.
Yeah.
When it's 90 degrees, but yeah, it's cute.
It is. She is excited about a big order, and Richard is cordial but uninterested, which she calls him on. She is sorry about the way things went for them, but blah, blah, who cares? We've heard this a million times. He doesn't want to talk about it right now, but Jane insists. She knows he doesn't believe that she loved him, but she is his friend, and she's happy for him and Joe, and she misses the talks they used to have when they knew each other for 10 minutes before they started fucking.
Seriously.
Anyway. She asks to get together for drinks the next night to talk things out, and since he has something he wants to talk about too, he's with it, and he even compliments her new haircut and, you know, see above. Mm. her cheekbones and her neck, they do suit it, but
yeah,
I miss the long hair. It was also nice.
Yeah. It shows your ears more. Okay, Graham.
Yes. Then Michael, Sydney, Amanda, and Peter are all mingling at a hospital fundraiser when Kimberly enters looking 9 feet tall in a spangled gown. And obviously, again, we love Sydney, but her new hairspray-inspired style cannot compare. She's got a fucking hair bow at this formal event. It's mean. Quit it.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Peter loudly greets Kimberly. This is the first Amanda has heard that Kimberly's back working at the hospital and is like, congratulations, I think. And Kimberly just smiles graciously and moves on. And Michael and Sydney are bitches about it, but also not wrong. Clip 12.
Pretty scary, huh? Kimberly preaching her sick gospel to defenseless clinic patients?
No, what's even scarier is the hospital considering giving her her privileges back. It's like appeasing Hitler by giving him Czechoslovakia.
I mean, credit for the delivery, but oof.
Yeah. Yeeks. At the bar, Sydney asks Michael why he didn't invite Jane, and he warns her to quit asking questions. And then the new chief of staff, Robert Davis, in case it comes up again, gets up to announce a $100,000 gift from an anonymous donor. But since Bobby walks in at the same time, we can make a reasonable guess as to that donor's identity. And Davis...
Surprise, everybody! He is the pediatric wing! <Ba-dum-tsh>.
Davis also credits the person who brought this donor to the hospital, Peter. And Amanda is impressed, but then spots Bobby and goes over to confront him. Clip 13.
You did this, didn't you? So that Peter will owe you? Well, it won't work. And to think it would insult his intelligence.
Amanda, sometimes people do things for the right reasons. And there are no hidden motives.
People, not you.
I didn't realize I was my own category.
Peter, keep bringing contributors like this. We'll have that new wing and you'll have that chief of staff job in no time.
So that's how that works. Okay. Good to know.
I'm reading a book right now about a doctor at a hospital, and it seems like it is. So fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, Peter has also put the story together and asks Amanda what Bobby is up to. She doesn't know. And the next day, Peter is golfing alone.
Mm-hmm.
Nice
as
day for Jack Wagner.
In Jack Wagner's contract.
Yep. When suddenly Bobby is there, having taken the liberty of putting his clubs in Peter's cart. That's not a euphemism. It's just literally what he did. And asked to join him. And Peter refuses. He doesn't like being puppeteered. He knows Bobby wants something from Amanda and from Peter. And Bobby admits he's right, kind of. He's starting a business and doesn't want to be blacklisted by people of Peter's stature. And when Peter obliquely mentions the whole mob thing, Bobby says that's his family, not him, and he owes Peter for the way he helped Amanda with Jack, who probably would have killed Amanda if not for Peter. Bobby wants to stay in L.A. and meet quality people with Peter's help, and Peter lets Bobby golf with him after all. Aw, it's nice.
Aw.
So then Sydney and her Mary Tyler Moore look are hesitantly approaching Kimberly for a session. Sydney is nervous as a cat, but finally does sit. One of her boundaries is using fake names since they know the same people. And though Kimberly agrees, Sydney can't keep it up and finally just blurts that she thinks Michael and Jane are having an affair and she's going to end up losing not just Michael, but also her home. And that leads to clip 14.
In the case of borderline personality, Sydney, what appears desirable once obtained becomes undesirable.
Oh, you're saying once Michael gets Jane, he won't want her?
What do you think?
It makes sense. And I definitely don't know what Jane is up to. She can't want Michael. She basically hates him. Oh, my God. I should push them together and call their bluff.
Which will probably make Jane run and or confess her repulsion for him.
Wait a minute. This isn't psychiatry. What the hell is this?
I'm only trying to help you, Sydney.
Seems to me like you're just trying to make Michael miserable.
Well, sadly, that may be one of the side effects of helping you. Does next Friday at 9 a.m. work for you?
I'll be there. What other schemes you got?
I mean, is this psychiatry? No, but you could argue it's life coaching.
And I have to say, when she started out talking about borderline personality, like, and I think that term is way overused lately, but I was like, wait, so, but isn't Sydney the borderline personality?
Right.
Because I feel like she is, like, much more sort of fearful of rejection and has these boundaries problems. But
right.
Again, I'm not a doctor, of course, neither is Kimberly, and none of that is even the point.
Again, shrinks, sound off in the comments. Tell us how you would diagnose all of these people.
Yeah, or even if you've just, you know, read every Dear Prudy.
Mm-hmm.
Just as valid as Kimberly's qualifications at this point.
Anyway, to Kimberly's question about whether the time works, Sydney's not against it, although it seems like kind of a hassle to come all the way there every week for 2 minutes worth of therapy, like just phone each
other. Needed a coffee card at the beach. Yeah, anyway.
She says it's fine as long as she can afford it, but Kimberly will treat Sydney for free, which unethical to treat her at all. Certainly unethical to try and rook her by doing it for no money. Later, Amanda finds Peter and Bobby drinking together at Shooters and is horrified to see them being both friendly and drunk together, but she doesn't have time to be mad about it for too long before Bobby is approached by two FBI agents, and after some minimal attempts to weasel out of it, he leaves with them. Over to the Hart and Mancini drinks, where Jane is congratulating herself for this? Clip 15.
Came to me like an epiphany. Brown is the new black, so I started using it for everything. Satin, cocktail dresses, suits, trousers. And women are buying it, Richard, in droves.
I always said no one has instincts like you.
Thanks, but truthfully, I don't know that I necessarily trust my instincts.
You shouldn't. Brown is the new black was a terrible time in American fashion. Yeah. Glad it's over.
It was.
Brown satin, ugh. Uh-huh. And we actually see one of those creations on Amanda in this episode, I think.
Jane is also in brown satin in this scene as well.
Oh, God. This is one of those times when it's kind of amazing that Patrick Muldoon can't really be convincing with a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Because for anyone to compliment Jane's designs is deranged.
It's true.
So, he's like, yeah, you should always trust your instincts.
Anyway, Jane would like to be able to come to Richard with design ideas and adds that she had forgotten how handsome he is. It's impossible for him to forget how beautiful she is for a second, he says. Oh, hey, what did he want to talk about, she wonders. Nothing that can't wait, he says. He offers more wine, but she and Michael are having dinner, and Richard clenches up as he says she didn't mention it, and then Michael's there at the table, leaving Richard looking even more constipated about it. Michael is really feeling himself as he thanks Richard for keeping Jane company and even invites Richard to have a drink with them, but Richard would rather not. And as soon as Richard has gone, Sydney is there, following the bottle of wine she ordered for Michael and Jane. Clip 16.
Just a little something to say that I'm open to an open relationship. I mean, we're all family, and I think we should be close.
What is this, Sydney? Some kind of bizarre reverse psychology?
I think it's her way of embarrassing all of us.
Not at all. Relationships mean different things to different people, and I just want you to know that however you define ours, I'll be there. For both of you.
That's great, Sid. Now leave before you burst into song.
I gotta go anyway. I'm meeting a friend.
Is it Kimberly? To have sex?
Michael,
please
say it.
Jane, I'd like to dance.
Okay.
I mean, you could at least consider it, Jane. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she seems like she kind of does because they both put on a show on the dance floor for Sydney's benefit because Sydney has not left. She's still there watching them. Michael and Jane do have good chemistry. I mean, it's mostly coming from him, but still.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the desired effect of upsetting Sydney, and she storms over to announce she has changed her mind. Jane says Michael has his hands full and leaves, and Sydney storms out behind her, Michael yelling that Sydney is nuttier than Kimberly. Debatable.
Mm.
Later, Amanda goes by Bobby's place. After what happened with the FBI guys, she was worried. Fighting the family reputation is tiring, he says. And when he doesn't ask her in, she just stands there awkwardly until she peeks inside and sees the place has been tossed by the feds. Which, like, it's a rented house he moved into yesterday, guys. Nothing is there, but okay.
Yeah, sure.
Amanda's sorry. He is too. No matter where he goes, there's always a cop waiting to give him a special welcome. Maybe they don't think people can change, but Amanda does. And she stammers that she doesn't know what to do. And he asks for her friendship. She readily promises it as long as he doesn't ask for more. And he seems like he's getting ready to try to kiss her. So she quickly takes off. And that's where we leave them for now.
Mm.
Let's close things up by naming our episode MVP. I'm going to say Kimberly again. She's positioning herself perfectly. And she looked incredible in that formal gown at the fundraiser.
Yep. I like that. I like that answer. Honorable mention to the return of drunk Allison Rage, because I'm usually here for it. Yes.
Least valuable player.
California's Medical Licensing Board.
That's a good one. They are definitely falling down on the job.
I don't think they exist.
They disbanded after that meeting about Peter's license in the season finale.
Or like they have to meet in Bobby, and every time he has to go to the police station, they can't get together.
I'm going to say Jake, ask people for help. Stop being this guy. It's boring.
Yeah, it really is boring. God. Speaking of boring, next time on Again With This, Billy helps Allison pick up the pieces. Amanda helps Bobby cable. Matt helps Ellen debrief at a question mark. And Sydney tries to help Jane fuck off. You'll want us to fuck off after you check out our visual aids. You can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. Or shimmy into some brown satin and head over to our Patreon for tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content, including our recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast. That's all at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm 19th holer, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is relative mother Teresa, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is flaky dance night guy team, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
That's a crock.
Ooh. What?